Welcome to Marafaya, the show that dives into the climate crisis in Belize. I'm Andre, and Digna is not on this week's episode, where I'll be talking to Nadia Boud of the World Wildlife Fund about mangroves, why they're significant, and why their conservation and revitalization should be central to Belize's environmental justice mission. Before my discussion with Nadia Boud, I will be sharing both my moment of gratitude and 1 minute of rage in Digna's absence. So today, I just want to express a moment of gratitude for solitude. This morning, I woke up in the house I live in by myself, having suffered an injury last night that put my back out and put me in my bed at around 8 p.m. And I wanted to take a moment to express gratitude for self-reliance that I hope that this new phase of life will help me further cultivate, not just in terms of logistical self-reliance, but also emotional. And, you know, trying to find some sort of spiritual grounding at a time when everything underneath us is shifting due to political situations, but also the broader global political situation that is the global warming of the planet. So my 1 minute of rage then is connected to that, and it's on the fire that happened in the Gulf of Mexico as a result of a rupture in a pipeline owned and managed by the Pemex oil company based out of Mexico. The rupture created what resembled to be molten lava, but was actually fire that was on water as the oil left the ruptured pipeline and spilled out into the Gulf. The fire was eventually extinguished after about 4 hours, but the image has definitely left an indelible impression on all of those who saw it and see it as representative of what is allowed to occur due to the violence of the fossil fuel industry's takeover on our political imagination. Okay, I'm here with Nadia Boud of the WWF, the World Wildlife Fund, and we're here to talk to her about mangroves today. Good afternoon, Nadia. How are you doing today? And how is it on your end?
Good afternoon, Andre. It's great to be here with you today. Things are going well right now. It's sunny and bright outside. A little bit hot, but overall, a good day.
Yeah. It's a good day for taking a mid-afternoon nap, that's for sure, to take a little rest from the heat.
Indeed.
I wanted to have you on today because I have been following a lot of your posts on social media that have been specifically discussing the significance of mangroves. And I thought it would be really good to have you on to get you to be able to share that knowledge with the audience of Marafaya. What is your relationship with mangroves? What sort of is your earliest memory of spending time in that space?
Okay, mangroves, I have a passion for mangroves. I started interacting with mangroves in my teenage years when I started high school. I actually I'm a village girl. I grew up in a little village called Bermudan London in the Belize River Valley. And I came to Belize City when I was 12 years old for high school. And of course, you know, within Belize City there, at least in my teenage years, there were still a fair amount of mangroves that exist within the city, you know. Belize City being initially a basin mangrove forest. And so you could have seen mangroves almost everywhere you look. And so I was able to see mangroves and I was so intrigued by their morphology pretty much, you know, the intricate system. And so I was that pulled me in that I would find myself, you know, in my high school years, you know, venturing out into mangroves whenever I see them to sit on the branches and just to observe the wildlife there. So I have a very early identification with mangroves, and from that I even went to Okinawa, Japan, to study for 3 months. I was studying sustainable management of mangrove ecosystems, and that pretty much reaffirmed my interest and passion for mangroves.
Nice, that's awesome. So what role do mangroves play in coastal ecological well-being? What living beings did you see relied on mangroves and necessitate them for their own success?
Mangroves is very important. You know, they exist at that interface between land and sea. And so from a terrestrial perspective, they do play an important role. as well from a marine perspective. And so within mangrove forests, you can find both aquatic and terrestrial species, you know, existing within. They use it for habitat, for food, for nurseries, for shelter. Within mangroves, you can find manatees. Manatees like to go and chow down on the growths on the roots system of the mangrove as well. You can find many bird species within mangroves or within the canopy of mangroves or within the shallow, you know, mangrove flats. You can also find tunicates. You can find reef fish that would use mangroves as nursery areas. So they would, at a young stage, they would venture into the mangrove system to shelter from predators. And then as they grow and, you know, and become larger, you know, they would then venture back into the reefs. And so that's why we always say that there is an ecological interlink between reefs and mangroves, because mangroves, apart from buffering, you know, pollutants, you know, from entering the sea, it also offers shelter and you know, and habitat for many commercial reef species. So you can also find other terrestrial animals. I mean, a couple of years ago, we saw jaguar, you know, within, you know, the mangrove forest. So you can find other wildlife, you know, there. So it does offer, you know, they do rather offer habitat and shelter to a diverse variety of species. And from the human side, I mean, during storms and hurricanes, mangroves have traditionally been used as shelter, you know, for humans to, you know, they would go in the mangrove canopy to avoid, you know, impact from the storms, for example, no? Or if a fisherman is out and a donkok would come down, they would go within, you know, the shelter within the channels of mangroves to wait out the storm that might be passing by. So from both a human and a more biological diversity perspective, they are very important.
That's amazing. Some of the animals you listed there, I was surprised to hear what you mentioned. When you spoke about the
monkeys as well, baboons.
Everybody's hanging out in a mangrove.
Yeah.
So one thing I'm curious about is, what are the various types of mangrove Belize has? You know, there's various species, just like many other living beings. But what species does Belize have, and how do they vary in terms of their maybe their location and also their function?
Yeah, Belize have a total of 3 true mangrove species and an associate called buttonwood. The 3 mangrove species are the red mangroves, the black mangroves, and the white mangroves. So the red mangrove's scientific name is Rhizophora mangel. The white mangrove, Laguntulera, and then the black mangroves, no? And then the buttonwood one is the Conocarpus erectus. That's the associated. It's always found associated with mangrove ecosystems. The 3 species exist along a zonation from east to west, no? The species that you would find immediately along the coastline that might be washed, you know, by seawater during the tides, are the red mangroves. So they are the one that you would find immediately along the shoreline. And then as you move, you know, inland, you will encounter the black mangroves, then the white mangroves, and then you can find the buttonwood interspersed, you know, between those. And they have different morphological adaptations to be able to withstand that environment, because you would think that based on salt tolerance, no? You would think that because the red mangroves are along the coast, that they will be the most salt tolerant, but that's not quite the case. The most salt tolerant species are the white mangroves, because along the shoreline, of course, it's, you know, traditionally has been washed with seawater over time, and you have had accumulation of salt within the soil. And so the soil, you know, the salinity of the soil has increased. And so we have to have different morphological adaptation to live in that environment, for example, to expel salt from their tissues. And so for the black and the red mangroves, you know, they would expel salt through the leaves. So if you go into the red mangroves and the white mangroves, and you pull out one of their leaves, you will see that salt has crystallized on the leaf.
Wow.
Also inland, because sometimes you have areas that it hasn't been inundated by water for quite some time, and so that area has become sort of like anoxic.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to also have a morphological adaptation. We call them aerial roots because mangroves breed through their root system, and so that's why they have these big buffering buttress roots above the soil. And they have these things that are called pneumatophores on those roots, like some little bumps that allows them to take in air. And so for the red mangroves, that's why you see the big buttress and those big, branching root system is not only for to anchor themselves in the soil, but also to be for them to be able to breed, to take in air and incorporate that within their tissue, no? For the black mangroves, they might not have those big buffering root system like the red mangroves, but they have a lot of little pencils, root system coming up out of the soil, like little spikes. And that again too is because the soil is very anoxic. It means that it's very low in oxygen. And so they extend the root up so that they can capitalize on the air above the soil system.
I didn't realize that there was so much variation between them, and the idea of like the way in which they are salt sensitive, that's also very interesting. And yeah, you really threw away my assumptions when it came to, like their proximity to the sea having some sort of very evident relationship with that salinity. So wow, you're really giving an education here for me. The other thing I wanted to ask then is, like, what is your current work on mangroves like with WWF or through other organizations you're affiliated with?
Yeah, our work, of course, for those who might not know, World Wildlife Fund is an international conservation organization. And so our aim is to work, for the sustainable use and management of the natural environment. In Belize, a lot of our work is invested in the coastal marine area. We also do work in the watershed and working on better management practice with the aquaculture farms and so forth. But a lot of our investment is in the coast and marine area and focusing on mangroves and coral reefs and also ramping up our work on seagrass beds as well. But a lot of our work has on mangroves have stemmed at monitoring and mapping the extent of mangrove ecosystems within country, because we know that they are so very important from a coastal protection viewpoint and also from a fisheries and tourism viewpoint, because more and more people are carrying out tourism activities within mangroves. You can have you can do tours, mangrove tours, for example. A key location right there is in Hallover Creek, just in Belize City, because you can do tours there. You can take tourists to see the biodiversity within mangroves, and those lovely channels that may traverse within mangrove ecosystems are beautiful to experience. Yeah, so the idea is of doing this is so that they are there for the enjoyment of humans, as well as the other species, of course. So we monitor and map the mangrove extent. We try to work with the government, work with communities, stakeholders, NGOs, and others to try and put in place actions to help protect mangroves, to help restore mangrove ecosystems, to help revise policies and legislations towards increasing protection of mangroves. So our work on it is sort of like very integrative, if you think about it, looking at social, ecological, and economic aspects of mangroves.
So mangroves are an ecosystem that you've already shown are very important to Belize and many of Belize's living beings. But yet I feel like mangroves do not get the same sort of acclaim or discussion about them in terms of importance of conservation. And I wanted to know if you could offer any explanation as to why that might be, their positioning within conservation discourse by the broader public.
Indeed, I do agree. Mangroves, compared to, say, coral reefs, haven't been given the attention that that they deserve, no? And so we definitely need to change the discussion and raise the level of attention and benefits, sharing more vocally and more visually, more publicly, the benefits that mangroves provide to Belize and to people overall. And so sensitize the public and change that mindset of people seeing mangroves as wastelands you know, to be just cleared and filled, you know, for some major development activities. We need to look at the benefits they provide ecologically, as well as benefits that they provide to landowners, because it's cheaper to keep mangrove on your property to help stabilize your shoreline, help stabilize your waterway, your marina, compared to just clearing it and putting up a seawall that could be, you know, easily collapse at the next storm event that comes. Because our research have shown that investing in mangroves, and we tend to call it green engineering, no? Compared to harnessing the role of nature, as opposed to gray engineering, where you use only concrete seawalls, artificial stabilizers, pretty much. And economically, it's more cost effective and more functional to use nature as a coastal protection option, as opposed to concrete or gray engineering techniques. Also, by plant, you can trim your mangroves. I mean, it's possible for you to build mangrove into your landscape design for your property by trimming them, into a nice little design. While you do that, you don't take away from the major function of the mangroves, which is to stabilize the shore. So you don't destroy the root system, for example, but you can trim off some of the branches. No, the National Mangrove Regulations allow for that, but you have to get the necessary permit. Also, by doing that, you can also build attraction along your coast in terms of the species and other marine species that fish and other marine species that might come to your property. Because they are attracted to the root system of the mangroves, no? So you know, once you plant it, you will see diversity coming into your area, and that's also an ecotourism potential that you can use as well. You can put boardwalks within your mangroves, which you could trim small openings and put a boardwalk there, or you could put a boardwalk along the westward side of your mangrove systems. There are a couple of developers that have been showing, the benefits of doing that, and we've seen good results, no? So these are the things that we need to start sharing more publicly, good development by design, where you can harness the function of these natural ecosystems like mangroves as part of your property, your landscape development design. You don't have to be clear-cutting mangroves and just, having everything looking artificial pretty much, no?
Yeah, entirely. And I'm curious as to whether you have any resources you can recommend our listeners that they can refer to, or are there any companies in Belize that assist with this sort of mangrove landscape development that you're discussing that would provide the skill building that might be needed that people don't feel they have at the moment?
Yeah, this is something that we do need to work on. There are a couple of developers, for example, in Placencia, there is a Cocoplum Estate, that have done an excellent job of integrating mangroves within their property, along their waterways. And they had hired the individual people to let them and instruct them basically what they want to have on their property. So what we need to do is maybe put together a listing of landscapes persons, and also maybe work with them, train them on the best method for trimming mangroves that they don't destroy the tree themselves, no? And another option that we are looking into potentially developing a manual, for landscape designs for mangrove ecosystems. So these are things that these are some gaps that we are looking to try and fill, Andre.
Yeah, because I have seen a variety just from the page that you. What's the name of the page again on Facebook?
We have a Facebook group, Belizean Mangrove Conservation Network. So on Facebook, we encourage everybody to visit the page and join the group, and join the discussion there.
Yes, and one of the most amazing and impressive parts about it to me are the variety of mangrove restoration projects that people have come up with. That there's a lot of experimentation in this area right now in Belize, and so I think it's a very exciting time for people to start to learn and recognize that most of the solutions are not, fancied. A lot of people are taking existing materials from the shoreline and then using that to create these a lot of it is like protecting mangrove shoots, right, from initial growth, and then from there once they take root, then they just seem to really thrive a lot of the time.
Indeed, mangroves are a very hardy species. They can grow pretty much everywhere. I mean, even in rocky ecosystems, you would find them grow. Their seedlings, once they touch, you know, some sort of hard, you know, structure, they will start shooting out their the branches and attach themselves. And so even the restoration activity is very simple. In calm environments, all you need to do is collect the seedling and stick it into this sandy, you know, the soil pretty much, and it's going to take root from there. In areas that are more highly exposed, you know, to maybe current activity, for example, you can just use simple measures like pimento or bamboo, you know, and create like a wall. And then you plant the seedlings, you stick the seedlings in the soil behind those. And when you put the bamboo or pimento, you just leave a small little space between them so that the water can still come in, you know, and flush, you know, and provide some flushing for the mangroves that they need, no? But it's something very simple that can be done. A child can do it. So that's why we encourage people to try and do it as much as possible.
One of the additional benefits I've come to realize about mangroves that I haven't seen elsewhere is that mangroves provide, provide like a barrier to visibility from the coastline. If you're someone living on the coast, because I think sometimes people, when they live on the coast, they feel susceptible to basically incursions from the coast by other people. So it also provides, mm-hmm. I guess, a bit of a natural barrier, you know, as opposed to developing a something that's more destructive or destructive to animal migration, you know, like a cement wall or something of that sort.
Exactly, indeed. Much, much better.
Yeah, entirely. And it just looks better too. I whenever you see a big cement wall along the coast, it's pretty devastating to recognize that somebody has disrupted the ability for, you know, animal species to go in and out from the water from that space.
Indeed. And you have species such as even marine turtles that would want to come on land to mm-hmm. nest. You know, sometimes they go and nest, in soils that they can get some shade from the mangrove canopies as well, no? So they need that free movement and access to the beach, no? To the shoreline.
So I see you often posting on the mangrove group. You regularly post about the fact that there is a law on the books in Belize that prohibits altering mangrove, meaning cutting it down or minimizing the size of it without a permit. This is something that you repeat often, and I'd asked you about it once on Facebook, whether you have seen any signs that this law has seen a decrease in illegal mangrove alteration, or how do you think the enforcement of this new law is going right now?
Yeah, that it is an issue. This law was revised in 2018, revised and enacted in 2018, and it offers stronger restrictions when it comes to cutting mangroves, stronger fees for permitting and for application and for infractions compared to what was on the book before. Because before there was, I think, $200 Belize for breaking the mangrove law. And so we had seen developers just going ahead of and doing whatever they want and just worried about paying that fee whenever, you know, if they get caught, if they are caught pretty much, because the department, the other regulatory agencies have complained that they don't have the resources and, you know, both financial and manpower to patrol the breadth of the country. And so by us doing this and creating this network and engaging others, we want to create this groundswell of support and action for the average person to contribute to be a champion for mangrove conservation and better management, and letting people know when they're doing something wrong and letting the government knows, you know, reporting the any infractions to the government, no, so that they are playing their role as a member of this country. As a person that know the benefits of mangroves and have benefits from mangroves over the years as well. So the law was, as I said before, was revised and enacted in 2018. We had participated with the government in that process. Of course, we were part of a task force that was that the government had put together to revise that law. And I had distinctly said, from 2018 that there was a need to socialize the law. You know, because oftentimes we have laws, but they're on book, on, you know, in paper only. They're, you know, on a shelf stored somewhere. So people don't know what it entails, really and truly, you know? And so they just keep on breaking the law. Or if they know, they, you know, like they don't know, and just continue to do whatever they want to do. And if people don't know about the law, they won't be able to be good watchdogs, you know, to help report whatever they're seeing, no? And so the aim of what I've been doing, you know, using the network and sharing the information about this regulation is to sensitize the broader public about what is entailed within this mangrove regulations. The fact that, you know, people cannot, you know, indiscriminately cut mangroves as they please, because there are, you know, a permitting process that must happen. And even if they are given a permit, they have to put a sign at that particular site with the with a copy, a waterproof copy of their permit, so that the public can know that they were given the permission to do so, to do that alterations. Because oftentimes you're seeing, you know, mangrove being cut and you don't see any explanation as to why it's been cut. You know, no proof of that they have the permit to do so. And so this is what we've been trying to do, to at least support the government, you know, in our sense, and sensitize the general public that they can also help in being good watchdogs and good champions for mangroves in this country, no?
Ideally, what more do you think can be done to educate a larger percentage of Belizeans? What do you think the status right now is in terms of formal education at schools for kids on the subject of mangroves and their importance? Because I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of my ecological education in Belize, and I had some good science teachers at different times, but I never felt like I really received the opportunity to develop an ecological education. And I wonder if you are familiar with whether or not that has changed in Belize's curriculum, and whether there is the opportunity for that to become a space in which a lot of this education happens for future generations of Belizeans.
Indeed, there is certainly much more that we can do about that. There is currently, I think what we need to do is get mangroves, get in addition to coral reefs, you know, get these ecosystems as part of the school curriculum, working with maybe the Ministry of Education, no? Because that's not currently the case that exists, no? And so all this information that we've been producing, we need to get it to the teachers. We need to get it to the Ministry of Education so that they can formally include these things as part of the national curriculum for schools, from primary schools and high schools in particular. I think when you're at sixth form and higher, you know, you can specialize in marine science or marine biology, where you can dive more deeper into these things. But it's certainly not well taught at the lower education level. The Southern Environmental Alliance, for example, a couple of years ago, produced a mangrove curriculum. But that is, you know, that's another good document that could be, that they can, I don't think they created it, but I don't think they effectively socialize it and try to get it in the hands of the ministry and in the schools, because that can be a starting point for sure.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I will look it up, because that's something that I would really like to get, because I feel like because I never received a formal ecological education, a lot of the stuff that I've learned has been, you know, just through reading and looking at different reports. Mm-hmm. I feel like I am still at a very, when it comes to the, you know, like the morphological aspects of different species in Belize, I feel like a lot of this information, it's sort of hard to develop an understanding of on your own without having some degree of mentorship or a space to discuss these things specifically.
Indeed. We also in the past had consultants that work with us to carry out education on mangroves in primary schools. We had he died a couple of years ago, Adrian Vernon. He was one of our main partner in Placencia that used to work at schools on the peninsula and in Independence Village to teach kids about mangroves. We even have a mangrove manual that he was using, no? A mangrove restoration manual that he was using to engage the kids and then take them out to plant mangroves too along the shoreline. So we need to do more of those things for sure, no?
Mm-hmm.
And getting kids to actually participate in the restoration activity that is, because those kind of activities would sensitize them more too, you know, to want to be able to protect mangroves.
What are some other goals that you potentially have for what you can do in your capacity of at WWF, or what Belizeans can do in a more collective effort to preserve mangrove environments?
So one thing that I am in the process of doing now is to create a mangrove alliance, a Belize Mangrove Alliance. And this alliance will include diverse groups, you know, individuals, organizations, village councils, CBOs, you know, community-based organizations, to work towards championing mangrove protection and restoration within the country. So we want this alliance to represent people from the north to south of the country. I'm also in the process of creating an action plan for the alliance that will detail different activities that we would like to get done. And then we'll also be fundraising, you know, to invest in localized efforts, no? By members to protect and restore mangroves. So those are, you know, things that we have planned in the short term that could also transcend and support conservation and management of mangroves for the long term, pretty much. No. In addition to that, we are also working with the government. We did modeling, you know, efforts to help the government set targets for mangrove protection and restoration within their NDC, which is their National Determined Contribution, that they will be submitting to the UNFCCC, the United Nations Convention for Climate Change. No, each country are responsible to submit their NDC every 5 years, and so Belize is in the process of finalizing theirs and will be submitting it by fall in time for the next meeting of the convention, which will be in November. But and so what we've been doing is trying to work, across scales from the local level to the upper level of government, to put in place actions to safeguard mangroves.
What do you recommend for us as the general public? What can we be doing to assist these broader initiatives that can help create stronger national policy among mangroves, or just better habits around our relationship to these habitats?
Definitely, I would say join the discussions, whatever platform you can find. The Belize National Mangrove Network is a good starter, because very soon we'll be reaching out to people to participate in activities even more, no? In your community, you know, join any kind of actions that are ongoing to restore or protect mangroves. If you see mangroves being cleared without that regulation that I mentioned before, have seen that signage that should be at that site with their permit. If you see that something like that happening, report it. Put it out there to the public, because we need to shame. Sometimes play the game of shame and blame, right? Put it out there as much as possible. No, and we have a platform on Facebook to use, so we welcome people to use that network, page that we have as much to the extent possible, no?
Yes, totally. And I'm glad that there is this resource, and there it's a very exciting community that I just hope people understand. Even though there's a lot of discussion of science, there's also just a lot of there's a lot of positivity on that in that group, from my experience, where a lot of people are just very excited to show off the various projects that they're working on, and there's a lot of positive reinforcement. So often these websites, these social media websites, can be sort of hellish in the content that's available there, but I just wanted to clarify for the audience, if you go on this group, you'll learn a lot, and you'll also find a lot of good energy.
Indeed.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today. I really feel like there was a lot to take in regards to the topic of mangroves, and I hope you can come back on to talk about, all of the many other habitats that Belize has that we need to not only discuss, but celebrate.
Indeed, it's been a pleasure, Andrea, and I look forward to coming back on.
If you like the show, please subscribe and consider writing a review for us over on Apple Podcasts, as it helps to increase the show's visibility. If you write a 5-star review, We will read it in a future episode. If you have a climate crisis or environmental story impacting Belize you'd like to discuss, you can contact us at madafyah, that's madafyah@gmail.com, or message us on Facebook and Twitter at madafyah. And be sure to hit that follow button. Our art contest continues to the end of July, where you have the chance to win $250 Belize for submitting a design that will be used on our first run of merchandise. Thanks to Alexander Evans for providing our theme song. You can find him on Instagram at Alexander Evans Music. And thanks to Demi Williams for providing our artwork. And thanks to you for listening to Marafaya. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. Rest when you can, and find some shade.